Okay, Robin, the floor is yours.
Okay, so I've been around DA since 1989, but I'll get to that in a minute. I was born in 1963 to a mom and dad of German descent in Pennsylvania, and I have a brother and two half sisters actually, of my mom and dad's first marriage. And early on, when I was about 6 months old, my half sister wasn't paying attention to me as she was dressing me. And I rolled and fell off the wall of the porch and fell on my head and had a concussion. So that was the first real trauma that I experienced as a kid. And that wasn't the first trauma that I've had, as you'll hear about. So early on, I've had to deal with a lot of sibling rivalry due to parental marriages. You know, my mom's first marriage and then my mom and dad, they didn't get along. And, there was a lot of things going on, you know, like things were labeled in the refrigerator. This was Jerry's, this was John's, this was, you know, you couldn't eat that and you could eat this, and don't get caught eating that. You know, there's consequences, and there was a lot of consequences and a lot of heavy things to think about in the home. And then my sister Jerry, who was there from my dad's first marriage, she came to live in our house. Now, she went from foster home to foster home, but my mom said, okay, we'll take her in, reluctantly, you know. And I don't know if you guys ever heard of a book called, a novel called Flowers in the Attic. Well, that was kind of like what our home was like. Jerry lived in the attic, and it was like, she never came downstairs except to go to school or to go someplace. She stayed up there. She ate up there. She slept up there, you know. And we had to go up, and I had to go up and get her dirty clothes and take her food. And, you know, and I was like her scapegoat, if you will. And that was a big role for me to play as a kid. And I was very confused as to, why does Jerry live in the attic? You know, because nobody talked about her when guests would come over. You know, she was like a real hush-hush. She lived there for about 4 years, and then she went to another foster home. My mom, she started having an affair with a married man when I was age four. And that went on for 14 years until I was in high school. And it was a very big embarrassment for me. You know, when I had friends over, they were like, well, who's this man? You know, why is he here? Where's your dad? You know, and it was a big humiliation in school, you know, because they were like, what does your dad say? You know, and I'd say, well, my dad works a lot. He's a workaholic. My dad worked about three and four double shifts a week, and, you know, he wasn't around. So I felt like that was his coping mechanism. That was his way to deal with it, you know. And so my mom came to me and she'd say, well, Robin, you can't tell anybody about this affair. You certainly can't tell your dad. So, because if you tell your dad, he'll divorce me and you'll have to live with me the rest of your life and you're going to be miserable. I'll make you miserable. And so there I was, having to keep secrets, having to tell lies, having resentments, having anger pented up in me all those years, 14 years of my life, wondering, am I ever going to get out of this? I had that impending doom, that impending abandonment issues going on. you know, wondering, am I ever going to get out of this relationship, this dysfunctionalism, you know, and the threats that dad will divorce her and she's going to make me miserable. And I was like, oh my gosh, then what'll happen? Oh my gosh, OMG, you know? So everything had to be keep quiet, you know, don't feel, don't talk, don't think, you know, as they say. And of course, my mom, she was a rageaholic. She had a lot of anger inside. Everything was yell, yell, yell. You know, oh gosh, the dishes weren't done. Nobody went and got groceries. The car wasn't washed. You know, everything was a major, major deal. You know, nothing was small. And of course, she went to the doctor. She had a lot of pills for anxiety. And next thing you know, she went in and she was hospitalized for it. And she had booze in the cupboard. And then she took me on trips to the bar, you know, when she was hanging on other men. And that's where I learned to count, is by other drunks sitting on a bar stool. That's not a good environment for a kid to grow up in. You know, I don't know how they do it today, but back then when a four-year-old is sitting on a bar, you know, sitting on a bar stool, that's not a good environment. She blamed dad for his workaholism as his propensity to have the affair. He worked, you know, those double shifts. And, you know, now I know that that was his way to cope. And he was stone-faced. He didn't talk. Don't talk, don't think, don't feel. Again, he didn't do that either. And, you know, I felt those feelings of inadequacy. I just couldn't do anything to stop mom and dad from fighting and from loving each other. And I was in that black hole. I could not fix things and I couldn't make them different. You know, and there's a famous quote, life is not a problem to be solved, but a reality to be experienced. Because of all this stuff, I grew up I grew up as an introverted person, not really attracted to other people, but attracted to animals. I liked dogs. I liked guinea pigs. I liked ducks and just any kind of animal except cats. I didn't like cats. Mom liked cats. She liked to keep them in the house and I was allergic to them. I resented her even more. I had a lot of anxiety and depression issues since early teens. I was very unsure of myself, always waiting for the other shoe to drop, lacking self-confidence, self-worth. Always told that I look fat. You're not dressed properly. You need to put on more clothes. It's too cold out, or, you know, something wasn't right. I never was told that, hey, you look good, you know? And so I never had that sense of completeness. I lived by very rigid standards. Mom was a concubine. She forced me to go to church. Yet she lived that kind of lifestyle. And then I wasn't sure. I had mixed emotions about religion. I certainly didn't understand what it was about. And I didn't think it didn't help our family. And then mom forced me to sing solos, you know, get up in front of the church and sing. And I was like, Mom, I have panic. I freak out. And I was crying. I had tears running down my face. Don't make me do this. And she'd just say, get up there, do it. And I couldn't do it. And, you know, again, as I said, I was extremely introverted. I don't make friends too well. I had one friend in high school that she was, but I was always preempted with fear that she'd leave me too. And then something bad would happen. So why would I have any? The same with men. I tried that. Failure was too painful. After all, Mom continually bashed Dad, saying, he bashed Dad, saying, you know, he was too funny, he didn't speak well, da 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 da. Okay, so then along came my brother, and my brother and I didn't get along well, and he always found something to make fun of me with. He picked on his little sister. Later in life, he too said, you know, he got into alcoholism. He drank. He drank all day long. He had a keg of beer in the basement. We still are not close. We talk on the phone once in a while. He moved away from Pennsylvania to North Carolina to the beach, but now he goes to the beach and he fishes and he drinks. You know, those are his two priorities. I just hope he prays and finds recovery. My older half-sister, Mel, and I remain estranged, but friendly. We don't talk on the phone, but we do text and we send cards, you know. She wants to know my business, but she's not very emotionally supportive. I believe she could qualify for this program. She still resides in Pennsylvania, but she refuses to have anything to do with my dad, given the childhood trauma of being outcasted from my mom's first marriage. She has a lot of unforgiveness against my dad for all that had happened in the household. Throughout my youth, my dad solely took me to activities such as basketball games, football games, car racing, fishing. And then later he bought a boat and we spent a lot of quality time fishing and skiing and, you know, just hanging out. And so, but that centered around Dad's workaholism and having to sign up at the fire company so he could go drink his beer, you know. And, but the boat stint lasted about 5 years. And then I began dating a guy and his parents bought me a horse for Christmas 1 year. And then, you know, I began to have a love for horses. And then my lifelong goal was either to become a veterinarian or a jockey and go to jockey school. Shortly after that, my dad said, no, I refuse to pay for your college. Even though I was on the honor roll, he denied to pay for it. And lo and behold, you know, things happened and didn't happen. But anyway, after high school, after I graduated, or actually in high school, I was in ski club and I was in there for 4 years and I loved it. Dad came up a day late, dollar short every year when it came time for me to go on a ski trip and couldn't rely on Dad. Big disappointment. And I never got to go to Vermont. Someday I will. See, self-care. I will go. Someday I have to have goals. Also, I did stagehand club in high school and theatrics and college in college and did that for 3 years. And they ended up doing it professionally for 15 years in Kentucky and Indiana and Ohio for the likes of, you know, bands like Metallica, Moody Blues, Aerosmith, Allman Brothers, etc. I also got to run a spotlight for Elton John in 1989. by the grace of God, Elton John's wardrobe door sign that I had stored away at my old house made it through the house fire last year. That was amazing. That was a sign of God. He was with me. In 1981, December, the year after I graduated from high school, I was running with my crowd to New Jersey and to a nightclub. And I left with a guy that I thought I knew. And we had been drinking. And at about 2:45 a.m. in the morning, we were going to New Jersey. And the driver fell asleep and the car went through a telephone pole. And it broke my leg, nearly killed me. Wound up in New Jersey in the hospital for 8 days. Took a whole year to heal with the bone growth stimulator. 3 years later, I had to have it rebroken because it wasn't set right. On and on and on. I just went through a lot. While I was in there after surgery, screaming with pain, my mom was yelling, you got to get her off these pain medicines. Look at her. She's going to get addicted. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, what about the pain I'm in? You know, and she was just so insensitive, just so insensitive to my feelings. Again, don't feel, don't think, don't talk, you know? December, that was in September, I had my leg rebroken. And then December, I took off for Mississippi and I said goodbye to Pennsylvania and goodbye to mom and dad. And you know, they never came downstairs to see me off in the car. And I just took off and drove and off I went and went to college for equestrian science. And I did that for a while. I was there and one thing that happened was I was wearing a sweatshirt that said Penn State. And I remember the guys from across the dorm, they yelled out, State Penn, you're from State Penn. I said, no, I'm not. Anyway, I stayed there for a semester. And then I went to another college in Tennessee for veterinary assistant. And I did that for a semester. Went back home. And then I worked with racehorses on the track and met a lot of neat people, met a lot of neat horses and started doing some photography work and really enjoyed it, really was cool. And then I met my mentor in photography and I decided I was going to go back to go back and do some office administration degree work. And I did that for 3 years in Tennessee. Then I transferred up to Louisville, Kentucky to combine all those majors into one, which was equine administration. And I did that. And and then I did some photography work, you know, and all that. And I did my stagehand work and I did decorating work. I don't know how much time I have. Oh, by about that time I moved to Louisville in September of 1988. I had a car accident. A lady ran into the back of me doing 45. And I was in pelvic traction for 8 days. And during that, I knew a guy next door. He took care of my apartment and my rental car. Ended up, while I was in the hospital, he manufactured marijuana in my apartment and also in my rental car, you know? And I was like, man, this is enough. So I threw him out. Long after that, in 1989, I met Hugh Smith, and stumbled into DA. And he said, come on, you gotta get into this group. And then the rest is history. He put my story in the book. He said, I want you to write your story. And it's story number 4 about gratitude, my attitude. Yeah. And just a real cute little thing that happened to me. I started a meeting over at West Louisville, and it's kind of a part of a town where they walk barefoot, and don't have t-shirts on. And it was an all-inclusive little club there for 12-steppers. And I walked in and I sat down, and some people walked in and they were like, "Well, what's the DA stand for?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. What, guys? What do you think, guys?" And they said, "Dumbass." And I said, "Okay." So that was an interesting meeting, to tell you the truth. So anyway, but you know what? But you know what? It's not a DA meeting for dumbass. Paradoxically, we are very intelligent people. We are very intelligent because we know the way out. We know where we're going. We are here for a reason. And the reason is to find our way back out of this mess, out of this black hole. Yeah, we're here to find a way out. And I wouldn't come back 34 years later and still say, yeah, I'm still making it. So I stayed, I got here in Louisville, and I was, had to gain residency in order to co start college here to finish my equine administration degree at U of University of Louisville. So I got hired on at U of L. And I said, great, now I can take two free classes a semester. I did that for 6 years, and then I finally got my degree in 95. And so I did that. But I got laid off in 2002. But in the interim, I got started getting ill. I started having bronchitis after bronchitis, and they took X-rays and they said, you got COPD. And eventually I had to go on Social Security and d disability. So that's where I'm at today. I don't work. Yeah, I bought a Nikon camera in 1989. And like I said, I had a friend who that was a mentor. He got me my greatest thrill. He got me to photograph the racehorses as they were coming down the track right at me. Oh my gosh, that was so exciting. Really exciting. But I had that house fire last April, and just about all those photographs and negatives and slides, they're just all gone. But I love to shoot the horses, the landscapes, the special events like the Kentucky Derby Festival, the fireworks, antique cars, animals, and such. I've been hospitalized numerous times for depression. One specific time was I got so bad that I was in there and I begged the nurses. They were all lined up around me, and I said, I beg you, please, please lethally inject me. Put me out of my misery. I can't take it anymore. And then something happened. God intervened. See, God always intervenes. And then they said, what about your dog? What would happen to your dog? And boom, that was a light switch. The light came on. And I said, man, I can't do that. What would happen to my dog? And then slowly things faded. And then one more time when I was in the hospital, I was sitting in the dining room, five other patients at lunch. Here comes another patient on the walker with nothing but an old flimsy flip-flops on and a hospital gown, one hospital gown, barely could go around him, and his backside was just about showing. And he looked at us and he said, Whoops, I just got screwed by a doctor. And I'll never forget that image, you know. So about 1992, I got diagnosed, and then things began to slow down. Because, you know, now there was no going out in my car 3 to 4 times a day. It was like once and done. You just go out, get 3 or 4 things done, and you go home. Because this is just way too exhausting. So from about 1989 with DA, I've floated from Al-Anon to AA with nearly 17 years, ACOA, Debtors Anonymous, Emotions Anonymous, but I'll always come back to DA because I love the fact that there's a meeting every day now, you know, and it's right in the comfort of my own home or, you know, wherever I am on the go. DA is a lifesaver. Speaking of, you know, and then I have to speak of my house fire last year. I didn't know this. And, you know, I just come home from having groceries, sat them down, and they said, get out. There's a fire. And I didn't know what was going on. And I grabbed the dog and my purse, and that was all I had to speak of. And I ended up having to spend a night in a hotel, and the rest is just, you know. So it's been a year and trudging the trenches for a year now. And wow, it's just unbelievable. I lost about 90% of everything. We couldn't, the property management kept lying to me, kept saying, in 4 weeks, it'll be finished. In 4 weeks, it'll be renovated. And they kept pushing it forward and pushing it forward. And I couldn't take the pressure. I couldn't take the, when's it going to be done? You know, I got to tell my landlord. I got to tell the hotel, just whatever, you know.
Robin, you're muted.
When you're muted. And so I sold the property in January, and then I ended up staying in an Airbnb, and then now I'm in a hotel, and now I'm trying to buy a house, and that's not working out. And God's just not, you know, he's just saying, okay, when it's not ready, this is not ready. You know, he just knows when the time is just not right. And I mean, just examples of, you know, today, I have to look at G-O-D. G-O-D for me today is to be outdoors, the great outdoors. And like, for instance, yesterday, I was deciding whether to go to a meeting, and I went outside and got in my car, and it started raining. And I don't like to drive in the night at night and when it's raining. And I got in my car and I went, dear God, should I turn around? And I paused when agitated, and then I turned the car around, and there in my headlights, not across the street, were two ducks. And I love ducks. And that was a sign of God for me, you know, because those ducks were there. And that was God telling me, we're with you. Those ducks were with me. He was with me. I made the right decision. I could have gotten an accident, you know. So I have to always look for those signs of God. And I always look for signs of eagles flying above me in circles. Those are signs of somebody from heaven thinking of me, just thinking of, you know, they are.